Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Mini Crush, the show with Noel Brown and Charles W. Bryant, where we fart around and get silly about movies and other stuff.
Fart around? Speak for yourself, Chuck. I take this very seriously.
No, you don't.
What? All right, fair enough. No, movies are a very important part of my life, Chuck, as is this podcast.
Oh, okay. If that's the story you're going with.
That's the story I'm going with, and I'm sticking to it. Okay. And no one can tell me otherwise, under duress even.
No one can tear us under.
Indeed. None can.
And hey, did you notice the theme song?
How could I not notice that rip-roaring, devil horns-in', rocking theme song? That
oh,
theme tune.
Oh, boy. Big thanks to Dan Maynard, one of the beloved old pal crushers. I believe in Australia, and Dan, he was very sheepish about putting this out. I was like, dude, are you kidding? Like,
yeah.
This is fantastic. I love his take on it.
I love his take on it, too, and peek behind the curtain. I mean, he actually reached out to me directly on Instagram and asked my, like, permission
to do a
It's, I guess, I don't think of it as, like,
sure.
You know what I mean.
Proprietary.
100%. It belongs to the people, you know. But you know, I did make that theme tune so many years back, and it was just really thoughtful for him to reach out like that. And then, of course, he just absolutely slammed it, slayed it. It
totally
sounds so cool.
Totally love it, love it. So, thank you, Dan. That's great. Maybe we'll just slide that in there every now and then. Maybe if some of our people like us chatting music, Noel. Everyone's saying you guys should do a music podcast together.
I did see that. And I actually had someone reach out to me on Instagram that asked if I make you a King Gizzard playlist, if I could share it out publicly. So I'm going to do both of those things.
Great.
I'm going to curate you. Because, again, they're the kind of band you got to curate because they're so all over the place. So I'm going to make you maybe just 10 song long, overdo it.
Let's do
King Giz playlist. And then I'm going to share it with the Crusher community.
All over it.
How you doing, man?
Noel, I am well. It is, I hope we get through this recording without losing power. It's supposed to get really nasty today.
I heard there was, some inclement weather afoot.
Yes. And, here in my neighborhood, we lose power very easily. What about you?
I'm out in Decatur. I know, you are two-ish, but I guess I'm a little further. I've only lost it once since I've been here, but I've only been here since June. So who's to say?
Yeah, they're actually going to bury our power line soon. There's a project underway, and these the people from the power company. I don't know why I'm even fucking talking about this. It's so boring.
Yeah,
these
it's
people
fine.
From the power company
slice
came by.
Slice of life.
And they said, hey, how about if we give you some money to put this this huge green thing in your front yard that's about the size of a half of a golf cart? Mm-hmm. And I said, no, thank you. And they said, but we'll give you a little bit of money. And I was like, can I hide it behind bushes and things? And they said, no, it has to be completely exposed. And I went, no, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
I feel bad, but it's like, no, it's terrible.
This is called urban planning chat with Noel and Chuck. But you know the concept of eminent domain where
I
they can literally
do.
They can force you to do that shit. Like they don't even have to ask your permission sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I don't know about in this case. I mean, they're looking for willing takers because it's not like it has to be in my front yard. Like that's the only spot it can be located or the whole neighborhood doesn't get buried power. They're going around and they're placing them where people are like, sure, I'll take whatever money you're offering, but I'm not playing ball.
That's good, man. That's good.
You know, speaking of movies, Noel, and eminent domain, that was how we lost the Hollywood Star Lanes where the Big Lebowski was filmed. One of my regular hangouts back in the day when I lived right down the street And eminent domain came along and said, we're tearing down that bowling alley and putting in an elementary school.
Oh, my God.
It was sad.
Kids don't necessarily need to bowl. They do need to learn, though. But eventually they can learn to bowl. That was a cool old-timey L.A. Bowling alley, though. We have one kind of like that here in Atlanta, an old-school bowling alley that's kind of out in the burbs.
Which one?
What's it called? Like Bowlmore Lanes or something like that?
I don't know about this.
I don't know. Maybe I'm making it up. But I definitely know that there exists somewhere in this area a cool old school bowling alley that may, well, not exist anymore. My memory is tenuous. But yeah.
No, your memory's solid as a fucking rock, Noel. Come on.
Buddy, I can't even tell. It's too early to tell if you're even being sarcastic or not. But I'll take it. Ah, fuck. Okay. Well, movies, huh?
Yes, movies, Noel. But before we get into movies, I do want to say also thank you. You know, I just had, as you do know, because you texted me very sweetly, my 50th goddamn birthday on 2 days ago on Monday.
The big one.
A week ago in real time.
The big 50.
It's a weird number to see on paper, I have to say. And big thanks to old pals Allison Gallagher, Galgs.
Oh my God, I don't know about gags. I think you should try again. Yeah, Galgs.
Galgs.
That's good. Let's go with that for now.
Maybe just Allison.
I like that. Allison's a fine name. A fine name.
I try to add an S, like Rebecca Robe is Robes.
That's good.
And Aaron Cooper, the three of them, Coops or Coop, put together this kudo board for me. Have you seen these things? Kudo boards?
No, tell me.
It's cool. It's basically like a little, you know, bulletin board web page kind of thing where people can put pictures and videos and just type out well wishes.
I was about to say that very word, well wishes. I think people need to bring well wishes back. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really lovely. And so many people chimed in. I got to hear the voices, some of the old pals for the first time. Stellan Carlson, my God, in that wonderful accent. And he sang me a little song. And Brittany Story is the sweetest human alive. She just has this little sweet voice and kind demeanor. And I just wanted to put her in my pocket, which sounds totally creepy. Can we say that still? Put someone in my pocket?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it depends on the I think it's all about context, Chuck. Okay. It's all about context.
I mean, in the best way. The Danger Oven trolled me with a video of Stevie Nicks and goats in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Maynard played the version live with his sweet, badass Les Paul.
Nice.
And pictures from when I had met people over the years, backstage at Stuff You Should Know stuff, and just kind words. And it really, like, I'm not a big birthday guy. I try to downplay it, but it was very, very special. I'll just say.
Where do I get a hold of this, Chuck? Is this just for you, or is this something?
No, I mean, I think if... maybe, I mean, it was posted on the Movie Crushers page, okay, and I think people can see it. I'll think it's just for my eyes only.
Got it. I'll take a look.
It was very great.
I may have missed that. Well, that's awesome, man. I hope you had a lovely day, and I know you had a little bit of a getaway with the fam, and I hope all that was wonderful.
Yeah, you know, Saturday we kind of celebrated one of my best friends, Eddie, who was born 3 days before me in the same hospital, and we've been friends since high school. Roommates in college, and we always generally kind of celebrate our birthdays together if we're in the same town, and we both live here, so we got together. My friends have a wine shop in Kirkwood, and behind the wine shop they have this big open grassy area. And we spread out a bunch of chairs and had about 15 people sort of, you know, distanced and talking and drinking wine, and it was great
indeed. Well, speaking of distanced and talking and drinking wine, or just the future of all of this kind of stuff, I got an appointment for the first shot for Friday.
Good, Noel. Glad to hear that.
I did. And I don't know if you've been able to yet, Chuck, but it does seem to be more possible here in Atlanta now.
Yeah, I am. I'm fully done, dude. I'm double vaxxed.
Oh, you're done.
And
cool.
2 weeks out, so I'm basically invincible, I think.
That's awesome.
Isn't that how that works?
That's totally how that works. All things impervious to all things.
Yeah, there is a light. A genuine light now.
There is a light. My mom got it a while back. That was obviously a big relief. Eden's mom got it a little while back, or the first shot anyway. So pretty close to all my immediate peeps being vaxxed.
I love it. I love it. Get that shot, everyone. I do want to do a little RIP to the great Yaphet Kotto, who passed away. Amazing character actor, everything from James Bond films to Midnight Run is one of the things that I've loved the most from. Alien, for God's sake. Just one of the great faces in movie history. The great Yaphet Kotto passed away.
I did a pretty good job of phonetically spelling that name to look him up on the internet. Yeah? I recognize the hell out of him. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's, like I said, he's got one of the great faces, a really good actor. And I think he was in one of those TV shows, like Forever, one of those cop shows that I don't watch. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. Yeah, Homicide, Life on the Street.
Got it.
That's where probably a lot of people know him.
There's so many iterations of those types of shows that it's like hard to keep track.
Yeah, and then there are shows sort of mocking that thing. Like, didn't one of those comedy guys do, like, SVU, SUV, CIA, yes. something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Paul Scheer's in that one, and a lot. Those are fun. Those are fun.
Boy, mm-hmm. Yaphet Kotto was in a bunch of movies. Thomas Crown Affair, Friday
The
Foster,
Running Man,
Star Chamber, good lord.
A lot of movies with Run in the name. Running Man and Midnight Run. Only two, actually, but still.
Very observational.
Yes.
Observant. Yes.
Observant.
My brain isn't working well yet.
That's okay, Chuck.
What a prolific guy, though. Look at that.
Really cool. Yeah, and in that iconic scene, I don't remember him being a huge... Obviously, Alien is more about Sigourney Weaver and, like, the aliens, because everyone else kind of dies pretty quick. But he's in that scene where the chest burster pops out, and everyone just freaks the fuck out, you know? Yeah. And apparently they were genuinely surprised by that in filming, and the reactions were pretty
sincere.
Yeah.
They didn't know that was going to happen?
Apparently, that's wow. what I've read, yeah.
That's pretty funny. So rest in peace, sir. I thought we should go over the Oscar nominations real quick. It is definitely a weird year for Oscars. It's delayed. Not as many movies obviously being released. A lot of the big ones being held back, but also releasing some big ones. But I need to do my homework, Noel, because I'm looking at Best Picture. The Father, have not seen it.
Never even heard of The Father.
I think it's Anthony Hopkins and
that's right.
Olivia Colman.
I do remember hearing about that. Hang on, New York Times is blocking me out because I don't have my subscription logged in.
Let's see. Failed New York Times.
The failing. No, they're still doing their best. This movie Nomadland I really want to see with Frances McDormand.
All right, haven't seen that. Have not seen Judas and the Black Messiah. That's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I saw half of Mank.
I loved Mank.
Still got to finish Mank.
Yeah, I know you said you had you needed a different headspace, I think, to really fully take it in. But yeah, we talked about this. It's been an interesting year for movies because there were no big giant tentpole movies. So that means there were just like a lot of like smaller movies,
which is great.
I think it's super great.
Minari, yeah, I have not seen.
Yeah, Minari. I know that Steven Yeun has really started kicking ass. He was in this movie called, I think it was called Burning, a Korean film where he plays like kind of a sociopath character. He was the kid on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
What is his name? Glenn, I believe was his name.
Yeah, stuff you should know, listener.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. Yeah, fabulous. Well, he's really kicking ass. Sound of Metal, I've heard, is really moving.
I did see that, and I did mm-hmm. see Promising Young Woman, which was great. Did not see Chicago 7, Trial of the Chicago 7 yet.
Got it.
Got a lot of movies to see, Noel.
Yeah. Interesting. Glenn Close got nominated for that Hillbilly Elegy, which just got ripped.
That was the Flophouse did an episode on that. It was really great.
I mean, that's Oscar bait slammed. I suppose so. And also, we talked about this. I mean, Mank, it is Oscar bait as hell. I mean, Hollywood loves a Hollywood, you know, love story or whatever. Well, that's not a love story. A love letter to Hollywood, as they would say.
I think the one of the notable things is the nomination of two women in the directing category for the first time.
Yes.
Or Minari, Lee Isaac Chung, and Emerald Fennell, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, for Promising Young Woman. both supposedly great. I mean, like I said, I love Promising Young Woman, but Minari's on the list.
And if I am not mistaken, the best actor category in a leading role is also historical, because Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal is the first Muslim to be nominated in that category. And Steven Yeun for Minari is the first Asian American to be nominated for that
Chadwick Boseman again. Oy, this is so sad.
Really sad.
All these.
Did you see that one? Chuck Ma Rainey's Black Bottom?
No, not yet. I just, there's so many. I keep acting like there were no movies released, but there really is a small list here that I need to check out.
It's very true. I've got my work cut out for me as well, Chuck.
But it's still sort of a, I don't know. I mean, who, you know me with the Oscars. I vacillate between like super into it and who gives a shit. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, but it's fun for a minute, especially if it's like some, you know, ones you really believed in, seeing them get their due. But it's always kind of a little bit like, you know, whatever. I don't know. We're on the same page, Chuck. Same way I feel about the Grammys.
Yeah, you know me with Grammys. I checked out of the Grammys in the probably early 90s. All right. We're going to move on, Noel, to a,
yes, sir,
a crusher post.
Oh, boy.
And this is good. This was from Rick Smith, who was a new pal, R.I.K. Smith. Mm-hmm. I always love it when they drop that C. Who needs it, right?
Who needs it? Extraneous. We already know it's a K sound. Why do you need the C to make the K sound?
Screw that C. Ugh. Chuck should be C-H-U-K.
Agreed.
What am I doing, Noel?
It's definitely edgier looking. I'm not going to lie.
So Rick asked this, what is the grossest stomach-churning, wretch-inducing scene in a movie? So I just thought we might as well dive into this nasty stuff.
Yeah.
He says his is Slumdog Millionaire, which was a very sad sort of abuse scene with a child. And I see in Rick's profile picture, he has a little bebe. So I get it, man. It's I mean, those scenes are always tough, but especially once you have kids, it's just very much nope territory.
It's tough, man. I find myself, we've talked about this, like as I get older and my kid gets older, just not seeking out those types of movies anymore.
Sure.
You know, I want like lighter fare, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I've lost my edge or whatever, but.
Yeah, you still got your edge. Look at you.
I'm edgy. Look at me. I'm a regular edge lord. Look at this beard, man. It's unkempt as hell. But yeah, the movie we talked about, the movie Audition, that is a movie that made me literally get up out of my seat and walk out of the room.
Mm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. It was a,
you never
particularly
finished it?
No, I finished it. I came back. I just was so, you know, taken aback by this particularly grisly torture scene and also some other things in that movie that really throw you for a loop. Because the thing about that movie is it sort of tricks you and lulls you into this false sense of security, thinking you think you know what it is, and then it just sort of like whiplashes you, you know.
And you
fly through the windshield. But yeah, that's one that always comes back to me.
Totally.
How about you?
Well, you know, I'll just comment on some of these because a lot of these are on my list.
Got it.
Yvonne Beaudet says Bone Tomahawk is the obvious one. Of course, we've talked about the split the human, you know, right down the middle scene.
Stem to stern is, I think, what they'd call that.
But he says in Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, something I still haven't seen. He said when Caroline drops her phone and her gum in the public toilet after puking in it, then fishes both out and puts the gum back in her mouth.
God. Oh, that makes me think of, I did a train spotting rewatch recently. I've been going through this list with my girlfriend.
I'm sure that's on here. Yeah,
there's that part where the most disgusting public toilet in Scotland or whatever.
Yeah.
And he, you know, digs the suppository out. And it turns into this surreal scene where he's clearly floating in water that is much more clean and beautiful than would be in that toilet. But it's a pretty rough scene.
Props to the art department for styling out that toilet stall so well. I've had to make poop before for jobs.
Yeah. What do you do? Like I remember on Chappelle's show, I think when there's one of the crackhead, you know, episodes with that character that like speaks to the kids class, and there's apparently a poop. He takes a poop in the toy in the trash can or something. They say like that was a melted Snickers bar. He says it in the
oh really
stand up part. Yeah.
Well, you know, certainly in Hollywood they make genuine fake turds for stuff like that, but I had to do cow pies for one, and I think we used a mixture of diatomaceous earth and water, and then made them into balls and then dropped them to give that splat effect and let them dry out, and then you have some cow pies.
I'm sorry, diatomaceous earth? Is that some sort of health food thing?
Diatomaceous earth. It's okay. You can look it up. It's a thing.
Okay. Never heard of it.
Very useful for lots of things.
Got it.
Cody Reed says in Jackass, when Steve-O got in a full porta potty connected to Biggie cords and was whipped around, that was pretty gross. Yeah. Because that was real.
Yeah. It is health food stuff.
I watched the first Jackass movie and maybe a little bit of the show, but I was never like super into Jackass. It was funny enough for what it was for a minute.
For sure. It's nice to see Steve-O doing well in his recovery, though. He keeps posting pictures of, like, I think it was a press photo or something where he's surrounded by, like, those Whippet canisters, you know, for, like, and just, like laying in his own vomit with, like, a pack of cigarettes and stuff. And then now it's like he's all healthy and has a nice shine to him or whatever. So
good.
Good job, Steve-O.
I'm glad to see that. That's fantastic. Mary Ellen Stokes says Human Centipede had some pretty nasty scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki Taylor Snyder says the arm in Requiem for a Dream. Oh boy, you ain't kidding, Nikki.
Yeah, a lot of things in that movie that are stomach turning.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that movie before. It is very difficult, but that certainly, the arm getting worse and worse and worse. Spoiler, by the way, people. The arm is getting worse and nastier, and then when he finally injects the wound right into wound. Oh my God, dude. It's the meeting of all the bad things in movies, which is needles in arms and wound porn.
Isn't there also an up close of when they finally amputate it of like that saw like going right into it?
Yeah.
And it just like I think I've mentioned before I am very triggered by cutting.
Yeah,
I don't like cuts, and that, you know, it's a saw, but it's like a sharp saw. It's not like a saw. It's like a really slicey saw, and that one really did it. And there was like a slicey saw. That movie triggers me in multiple ways.
Clement Scott says the hacksaw scene in The Terrifier gives the bone tomahawk scene a run for its money. Never heard of The Terrifier, but I think the title says it all, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zach Pointer says when Ray Liotta eats his own brain. Oh, what was that? That was the Hannibal Lecter movie, Red Dragon, I think. Remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That scene was fucked up. But silly. Like, it was so over the top and dumb.
Oh,
like, I couldn't.
Totally.
It didn't really creep me out.
Totally. There's a movie by the guy we talked about that you had, in my horribly gone awry segment of Pop Quiz Hot Shot, or no, Chuck's Holes, rather, with all the weird Asian movies. Art house movies.
Mm-hmm.
You had seen what's the one? Tetsuo the Iron Man.
Yes, yes, yes.
The guy that directed that did a short film called Haze, where it's basically a guy who's like in hell, and there's one part where he's having to traverse this super narrow gap, like between two walls, and he can only move left to right, but his teeth are clenched down on a rusty pipe the whole time.
Oh.
And it just is like a close up on his teeth as he moves laterally, just grinding in the sound of it. And it's like,
no, man, no,
it's a lot, dude.
Nope,
it's
nope,
a lot.
Nope, nope, nope. Especially me with my fucking teeth issues. No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, I mean, of course, American History X, like,
oh, the curb stomp.
God damn, man. Why am I even doing this segment? Rick,
I don't even.
I hate you.
I know. I don't even like watching people like chew on ice.
You know? I'm actually an ice chewer, so that doesn't bother.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, my teeth are very cold sensitive.
So. Brendan King says, and this stuff always gets me too, fingernail stuff. He said the fingernail breaking scene in Stir of Echoes. I can't take that either. Fingernails, teeth. Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm. There's a lot of Jackass stuff in here. Barbara Wise says when he drinks in Jackass, the sweat dripping from an obese man's ass. Oh, God.
Oh boy. I can see that at home. There's one look in the mirror. You know, I don't need to watch a movie for that.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
Gary Smith says the feces dinner scene in Solo. I think I've heard of that movie. And that
was
scene.
On my list. That was on the list of fucked up art movies that you had not seen.
And you saw it?
I have not seen it. Everything on that list that I had not necessarily seen. I was just trying to scoop you. But yeah, that's the one that's based on the Marquis de Sade's, you know, 120 Days of Sodom or whatever.
Legendary, awful movie. And in fact, Sue Rovins on the same thread says the entirety of Salo, like the whole movie. Can't do it. John Rinaldi says the barf scene in Stand By Me bothered me at the time. Oh, that's kind of funny. I think I remember it grossing me out, but looking back, it was like very kind of dumb and, or not dumb, but just obviously fake.
Is that the one where like everyone is triggered by puking and it becomes like a puke
by lard
volcano?
Ass. Yeah. The pie eating contest. Oh, here's one for you, Noel. The Danger Oven. Gail Kunt says the Achilles tendon scenes in Hostel and Pet Sematary, which I know you've spoken on.
I know. There's another Achilles tendon scene in a movie called I Saw the Devil, which is fabulous. But that particular, it's up close. It's great. It's got the guy who played Odessu in Old Boy as the villain. It's sort of a cat and mouse, you know, detective serial killer chase kind of movie. It gets very personal and very dark. I highly recommend it, but it's not for the faint of heart.
Oh, I'm having a hard time getting through this. Bradley Werner says, I don't do good with anything eye related. I think a lot of people are with you there, Bradley. So I am going to say the LASIK scene in Final Destination. I don't know what happened in that, but
I imagine that it's a LASIK procedure gone horribly wrong. That's pretty much what that movie's all about. Yeah.
This is pretty funny. Kelly Boschel says Uma Thurman and Robert De Niro's sex scene in Mad Dog and Glory. And, well, any Robert De Niro sex scene. The one in Jackie Brown is cringeworthy. Yeah, it's interesting. He's not a sexy guy. And he's usually his sex stuff when he's rarely done it is a little off-putting, to say the least.
It's true. I mean, you know, he is... You got to consider him kind of a leading man, right? But he's he's not a heartthrob, though, really, at all.
No, I mean, not that. He's rarely played that, like, a romantic lead.
He's always a bit of a macabre or kind of
a heavy sociopath
exactly, yeah, something like that. That's
one of the great actors, but I don't think anyone wants to see Robert De Niro making love. Am I wrong?
Well, I would not call what happens in Jackie Brown making love.
Of course not. Our old pal Stellan Carlson says any scene involving realistic vomiting, hashtag emetophobe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not into that either.
No, it's rough. Yeah, it's gross. There's a lot of realistic vomiting stuff in Audition too.
Yeah.
And I've been rewatching The Sopranos again, and there's a scene where Adriana vomits on this table, like out of nowhere, and it's a lot of vomit. It's almost comical how much vomit it is, but it represents the trauma that she's going through. You know.
Yeah.
So
Sarah Stapleton says 127 hours. Yeah, for sure. And at least three scenes in Midsommar. Yeah, did you see 127 hours?
No, but I know what it's about, and I know that there's some slicey slice, and I think I can do without it.
Yeah, you don't need to. You get it.
I get it.
Our old pal Vanessa Cashman says the scene in Magnolia with the frogs. I hate frogs. Who hates frogs, Cashman?
Interesting. That's interesting. I mean, they're definitely some big old honking bullfrogs and they're splatting against exploding, basically. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to yum her yuck. You don't like frogs, you don't like frogs.
That's true.
I love frogs.
Yeah.
You ever pick up a frog, Noel, and they just give you that look?
Well, what, the knowing look?
Well,
of
sort
a frog?
Of like, what are you going to do with me? I might pee in your hand. That look.
Interesting. No, no, no. I don't know this look.
All right. We'll finish here with Meenal Data says, one of our oldest friends says, not a movie. There's a full on castration scene in Fortitude, which is already a pretty gruesome show to begin with.
Got it. Yeah.
Goodness
me. Could do without castration.
I can do without all these. I don't know why I even picked that.
Well,
I'm just kidding. That's a good one, Rick.
That's a good one to close on, don't you think? Do you want more? You need more, Chuck?
I don't need more. I just closed out my browser even.
Okay, good.
And we're going to finish with a little stream this, Noel. I watched a true crime thing on I think it was Netflix, Murder Among the Mormons. Terrible
yeah, that's
title.
Netflix.
I think they just have to put murder in the title these days to make it searchable. But
trust me, Chuck, I am highly aware of this phenomenon.
But it was good. Did you see it? It was good.
No, I heard about it, and I heard it's a very interesting story and has some nice twists and turns. But no,
really good twists and turns. And not true crime, in that it's not like some super grisly slasher stabber type of serial killer. A very interesting story involving the Mormon church and documents that are worth a lot of money and some bombings that happened in the early 80s that I kind of remember, but highly recommend it. Our old pal who was actually on the show, documentary legend Joe Berlinger, executive produced it. So good stuff.
Have I told you my little term for the real grisly, kind of just miserable true crime stuff?
No.
I call it misery porn.
Yeah. When is that going to peak?
I feel like it's peaked. Feel like, I don't know, like for me, the shows that I'm more interested in and I'm more interested in making are, I like crime stuff and I like intrigue, but I like stuff that's a little more like of like noirish or like a detective, you know, cat and mouse story. All the stuff that's just super like rapey and just like, you know, really just awful,
horrible
things happening to people. Like nothing good will come of this that I could do without. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why. Yeah. I can recommend Murder Among the Mormons because it is not that very twisty, turny. Not noirish, but you know, good stuff.
Well, no, but and to that end, not to plug, but like I would recommend the podcast that I worked on really closely called Murder in Oregon. That is very much that thing. It's a story about intrigue and corruption that goes up to the top and all that stuff. And
that's what I'm into. Sure.
Yeah. Same.
I like a good cabal. You know.
Totally. Yeah.
Give me a cabal.
Give me a cabal any day of the week. Chuck, I just finished in one day. It was so good, and I was not expecting it to be as in-depth and actually kind of touching as it was. I think it's called High Score. It's a series on Netflix, a documentary series just about kind of the early days of video games.
Oh, cool.
It goes into everything from like the whole E.T., you know, Atari debacle to, you know, the earliest days of Nintendo. There's a whole like side story about how, like, I think it's MGM sued Nintendo over copyright infringement for Donkey Kong because they said it was infringing on King Kong. And Nintendo's lawyer basically completely confirmed that there was no crossover and it was not infringement at all. And his name was Kirby, and they created the character Kirby based on this lawyer. And there's so many little cool details that I didn't know. And a lot of interest. There's a whole thing about this very LGBTQ centric role playing game called Gay Blade that I knew nothing about.
I've never heard of that.
It's so cool and really touching. And it's all about like, what is it that makes video games so magical and transformative? And a lot of it is the fact that it puts us all on an equal footing. You know, people that maybe couldn't play sports or people that maybe were ostracized or
great equalizer,
whatever. Huh? Yeah. And I remember playing all these games. Like I remember when Doom first hit the internet and it was like the first online, you know, multiplayer game. And it was just a massive deal. You had to log on to your AOL with your, you know, dial-up modem, and it was just really nostalgic for me, but also like a lot of details that I wasn't aware of. Highly recommend anyone that grew up in the 80s and 90s and you know, early days of video games. This is for you.
I am all over that, man, and I will date myself, Noel. The first video game I got into, computer game that is, non-arcade thing, was Castle Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein 3D?
Apple IIe. No.
Got it.
So, dude,
okay, so Wolfenstein 3D was the first id Software game, and they must have based that on Castle Wolfenstein. So tell me, so this is a Nazi fighting game as well?
Very much 2D. I mean, sure, but it was like green blocks, and it was very much a game of its time. If you look up Castle Wolfenstein, like the original, here, I'm actually...
No, I'm looking at it. I get it.
They better not say there was only one. Interesting. Yeah,
no, it says it's a stealth-based game by Muse Software for the Apple II.
Yeah, so it's one of those games where you... Oh, yeah, there it is. Good Lord, that's bringing back some memories. Just a bunch of mazes. And then, you know, when I got my first little Atari at home, I thought the game Adventure was the end all be all, and Adventure was literally your character was a square block and your sword was an arrow. And it was like, it was a super advanced game for the time, which is hysterical. Totally.
Well, and that's the thing that's so cool with this documentary is it really contextualizes all of that stuff and like really makes you understand how cutting edge the things that we now look at as being super dated and how it's all about imagination. There's a whole like episode about text-based adventure games where it's like,
oh yeah,
and then you go to the well and then you look in the well, what do you do? Yeah, yes, exactly. Dude. All that kind of stuff.
That's cool. I got to see this.
Yeah.
I love it. Another thing I've been watching, Noel, is Emily and I are doing yet another dive into 6 Feet Under.
Me too.
It is
Me too.
The 20th anniversary this year.
Dude.
And we are in season two. And dude, I'm trying to get Alan Ball to come on the show
Absolutely.
To do a
hero.
To not even do a movie, to do a 6 Feet Under 20th anniversary special with Alan Ball. So cross all your fingers and toes, everyone, that we can land him.
I would love that. Chuck, it's so funny you say that. Unrelated to any, I didn't even realize the anniversary of it. I just wanted to start watching it again. I've been watching it with my girlfriend, and we watched the pilot. And I think I told you when my father passed away, I was into that show. Like, it was actually on. And you would think going through something like having your father die unexpectedly, you wouldn't want to watch a show where every episode was about death and you know, a funeral and stuff. But it was really cathartic to me. And I continued watching it because it was like actually helpful to me. And it was a very powerful thing. And I kind of needed it in many ways. But I hadn't watched it since. And so I watched this first episode. And there's the part where Ruth I don't want to spoil anything, but Ruth at a very important funeral for the first episode is just giving this really amazing monologue. She's not like, it's not just woe is me blubbering or anything. It's very like she's a very stern, interesting, complicated character. And she's kind of almost angry and like really, but something about what she said and the way she said it just hit me. And I just started like bawling.
Yeah.
And it was because I connected it back to this memory of my father, this memory of that time in my life, and also just the show itself being such an important show to me.
Yep.
And something just clicked in me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy shit. It just came out, pouring out this emotion. And I hadn't felt that or experienced that in long, long time. So
that's the best when art can like tap into that water, salty water vein that's somewhere in your body that you don't even know needs to get tapped, and all of a sudden you're like, Jesus,
that's exactly
why am
right.
I bawling?
That's exactly right, Chuck. It did need it. It needed to be vented. It's like you know, like letting out some pressure or something that's built up and you don't even know it is until all of a sudden you can kind of vent it a little bit, and then it's like, oh my God, I feel better now. Because it wasn't like, I wasn't upset.
Right.
It was just like this cathartic, like human feeling, and I was really, it was cool.
I love it, man. The pain can be a wonderful experience.
Well, and as you get older, you know how to process it and you understand more what it means, and that it is kind of about like, oh, I'm a human being and I feel things and that's okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you're young, maybe where it's like pain sucks and you want to just push it all down or push it away. You start to realize you can kind of almost like scratch that itch every now and then and think about painful things. And it's actually like positive, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we've been loving it. We're in season two, and and Emily, I think is her third, but she said maybe it's her fourth viewing of this series. I only saw it the once back then, but you know, we got together about 20 years ago, and so it sort of coincides with our anniversary as a dating match, and it's just bringing back those memories and the Fisher family and a time before TV. You know, sort of the early kicking off along with Sopranos and stuff like that, the early golden age of television. But before it was like, well, it's just like a movie, you know, it was still TV. It still looks like TV. It's still shot on a stage with sets, and it's still a square aspect ratio. Like, but it was really, really great quality shit. And I really hope we can get Alan Ball. We're in touch with his agent. That's where we are now.
That's amazing. I would love that so much. Huge fan. Like, and it's so weird that he went on to do True Blood, which I didn't dislike. I liked it for a while, and then I felt like it kind of jumped the shark a little bit.
I liked it for a while too. Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a bit. Exactly. Yeah. Same. But Wasn't 6 Feet Under they must have remastered some of that stuff, because I feel like it's not square now.
No, it's square. It.
It's still square. Okay.
It is on HBO Max.
Yeah, that's what I'm watching it on. But for some reason, I don't know.
The only way they could do that would be, you can.
Cropping. You got to push in.
Yeah. Right? Fuck that.
No, then you lose a lot of the frame.
You lose the frame. So the last thing I've been watching, I want to mention is something I definitely want to recommend to you. Although you may have seen it, it's a movie, animated film called Wolfwalkers.
I've heard it's fabulous.
It is great. Yeah. It is from this Irish animation team. I think the third in a trilogy. I have not seen the other two. I think they're unrelated, but hand-drawn animation, dude, and you can tell that humans drew it. It's like one of the most beautiful storybooks you've seen come to life, and just such a great film. Gorgeous, gorgeous movie. Nominated for an Oscar. It better win. I'll be so mad if they just go the Pixar route like they always do. So huge recommendation for Wolfwalkers.
Yeah, and it's the same folks that did The Secret of Kells.
Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea.
Song of the Sea, none of which I have seen, but this animation studio is a big one on my list. I need to check out all of this stuff because
it's really gorgeous. Yeah. Oh man, I'm looking at some of these stills now and there's a difference, man. I'm not saying it was just so much better back then, but there is a richness to that hand-drawn stuff that you just can't quite get via the computer.
Totally. You know?
All right, Noel, that's all I got. What else have you watched? You got anything else?
Yep, just been doing the 6 Feet Under thing and the High Score. Love both of those. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Watched. Oh, yeah, I told you about Kajillionaire already. Did you get a chance to check that out yet, Chuck?
Not yet.
Highly recommend.
It's on the list, though.
Yeah, no, but you've given me a lot of good things. I need to really catch up on some of these Oscar ones, like Minari and Nomadland. And
yeah, those are the big two for me, I think.
Also want to see Steve McQueen's his massive five-part thing called the Small Axe Compendium or something like that.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, it's I think he did it with the BBC, and it's five movies that were made as a mini series for television, and several of them have made quite a few end of year lists. It's about an immigrant community in England.
Yeah, this is great.
I believe, yeah, Steve McQueen,
John Boyega,
exactly,
friend of the network.
Yeah. Friend of the network. Check out his podcast, Tomorrow's Monsters, that is in season right now. But yeah, Small Axe Anthology. Mangrove, Lover's Rock, Red, White, and Blue, Alex, Wheedle, and Education. It's all about a community of West Indian immigrants living in, I believe, London.
This looks great.
It looks really cool, and it's not something that I have had access to. I think you must have to have a BBC America subscription, but I want to figure out how to get a hold of that.
All right. Good stuff, good recs, good times, great oldies. Keep your feet on the ground.
Mine was oldies 93.9. I think they had those voices that they must have done different numbers, and they could have just they subbed them out to whatever stations, and they were able to fill the the promo need for the numbers of the call letters.
Yeah, I think everyone of a certain age can call up something from their radio childhood. WKLS 96 Rock.
Exactly.
That was one of mine. Star 94. So funny.
Augusta. That was my town.
All right, good stuff, buddy. We'll see everyone next week.
Yes, indeed.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.